Welcome to the Friends of the Firm podcast, a production of Palmer Wealth Planning, LLC, where we take a deeper dive into life's big expenses that might not always be discussed with your financial advisor. This podcast delves into the intricacies of hiring service providers and navigating life events with an educated mind. Join us as we unlock industry insights from experts in their field to help empower you to make the most informed decisions.
Before we dive into today's episode, our wonderful lawyers have advised us that we need to have the following disclosure. We want to remind our listeners that the content provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell. While we strive to provide accurate and up-to-date information, investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Listeners should consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. Any opinions expressed by guests or hosts on this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Palmer Wealth Planning, LLC. We do not endorse or guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information provided in this podcast. Listeners should also be aware that past performance is not indicative of future results. The strategies discussed may not be suitable for all individuals, and each person's financial situation is unique. Lastly, please be advised that Palmer Wealth Planning, LLC is an investment advisor registered in the state of Tennessee and in other jurisdictions where exempted. Investment advisory services are offered through Palmer Wealth Planning, LLC only where licensed and authorized. Thank you for tuning in to the Friends of the Firm podcast. We hope you find the information valuable and encourage you to conduct your own research and seek professional advice when making financial decisions.
Now on to the podcast.
Welcome to the first episode of the Friends of the Firm podcast. Today's guest is Taylor Ammons, owner and president of Paragon Roofing. And this guy has a wealth of knowledge of the processes of hiring contractors, contractor obligations, and working with homeowners on insurance claims. Be sure to stick around to the end of the episode where we walk through a sample homeowner's policy. Taylor is going to point out what you should be looking for in your policy and, equally as important, what your obligations as a homeowner are. There's a link to this sample policy in the show notes if you would like to follow along. Thanks again for tuning in. Let's get started. All right, Taylor Ammons, welcome to the show.
What's up, brother? I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. And it's kind of funny because we had it scheduled for earlier this week, and then the storm just came through. We had to reschedule to today. So how'd Tuesday go?
Man, it was actually it was a lot more hype than what it ended up turning out to be. But at least in our line of work, I would rather make sure people are prepared and then it not be severe than for them to have no idea and then it end up being like catastrophic. So I'm pretty grateful, but we still got a lot of heavy rain. So I'm sure that there were still a lot of leaks. We've still gotten a lot of calls come in for water intrusion and stuff like that. So I'm just grateful we didn't really have any extreme weather and that everybody's all right in Tennessee.
Yeah, they did hype that up a lot. So Birdie's daycare even closed early that day.
And I saw like Williamson County shut their schools down too. So if I'd have been in high school, I would have been loving it.
Yeah. So tell us about Paragon Roofing.
Yeah, so I own Paragon Roofing. We service all of Middle Tennessee and Greater Nashville. And I started Paragon in 2021. And, you know, in full transparency, I never even plan to have my own roofing company. I just always wanted to be a roofing sales professional. I worked in the automotive industry for a long time. And then when I found the roofing industry, I was able to get into an industry where I could serve homeowners and it wasn't really monotonous, like being at a car dealership for 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And, but a couple of the companies that I worked for kind of operated a little outside of my core values that I like to live by. And so it kind of triggered me to get Paragon going and try and bring a little bit more value and customer service to the Middle Tennessee market. And so that was kind of what birthed this whole thing. And then it's continuously blossomed over the last couple of years. And we've been dialing in some systems, dialing in some processes, and just trying to really provide that white glove experience to everybody we get the pleasure to serve.
Yeah, I love your social media presence, too. You've done a really good job with that. You know, and it's super educational. I love it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I actually, a lot of people wouldn't know this, but I hired my mom to run all of my social media content, and she does a really good job. I paid and put her through like a little social media school so that she could learn a little bit more about it, and it works out well because at least I know that she's taken care of and that she can work remote from the state of Georgia, so it's pretty sweet.
Awesome. So a lot of this show is going to be talking about consumer protections and how people get paid and stuff along those lines. So When, and I know clearly after storms, when do you need a roofer? Do you need it before the storm? Do you need it? Clearly, we would need it after the storm. But so how does that process typically work for y'all?
Yeah, so a lot of our clients and even just homeowners in general, I always recommend an annual roof inspection. If there's been an influx of severe weather, I always recommend post-storm inspections just so that there's not anything that may be allowing for water to come in. But anybody who typically goes a lot longer than annual or biannual inspections or something like that can end up having some issues that maybe would have been repairable at the time, but then end up developing into some pretty serious issues where you end up with maybe a lot of rot, wood rot and things like that, and it drives up those repair costs. So I definitely encourage annual inspections. It's something that we offer to a lot of our clients, and we also offer the Paragon Storm Protection Program. So any clients that are in our database also get linked to our storm monitoring software. And so when those contacts or assets are impacted by severe weather, it'll notify us, and then we're able to notify the homeowner. So the homeowner really kind of has peace of mind and, you know, hey, if Paragon doesn't hit me up, I'm pretty good. But again, that data can still be off a little bit. So it's always good to just have eyes on it. But definitely post-storm, definitely if it was severe. And then usually, you know, you may not need a roofer directly after a severe weather event, you know, unless you walk around the property and you notice that there might be some shingles on the ground or a lot of limbs on the ground or debris on the ground, because that can point towards a pretty severe event where it wouldn't be a bad idea to get the roof looked at. And the other thing is, let's be honest, every roofer does free inspections, so it doesn't even cost you anything. You might as well do it.
Yeah. So when something happens, let's say after a storm and you see a leak or you see something going on, what do people typically, would somebody call their homeowner's agent first, or do they call a roofer first? What do you think is better? What are the pros and cons for that?
Yeah, so we see it all the way across the board. I've went out to homeowners' houses and met with them after a storm, and they've let us know like that they've already contacted their insurance company and started a claim. And I really, 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 really advise against that, because, you know, these storms are so unpredictable, and each house is going to be affected differently based on the construction of that home, the direction it faces. So just because people in your neighborhood have sustained damage doesn't necessarily mean your home has. And oftentimes, claim happy customers or something like that can be frowned upon when it comes time for renewals and things like that, or if they're going around to shop insurance policies. But a lot of people, if they do have a relationship with a local agent or an agent that they know, like, and trust, they will call that agent. And oftentimes those agents may have some roofers that they've done business with in the past that they can send out and double check. I know I have a handful that we work with. And but some people will just call. I usually like to post it around on social media after a storm and just make myself available for peace of mind inspections. But the best way to do it would be if you do have a relationship with your agent and want to lean on their referral network, that's always encouraged as well. But the other thing would be, and we can get into this in a little bit, is kind of how to find a reputable contractor to come out and look before you ever even file a claim. And another thing that I do encourage, and this may sound kind of counterproductive to what I do, but I encourage getting multiple opinions on the damages that are seen, because I've went behind multiple roofers that will claim hail damage or wind damage or something like that, and I'll get up there and just don't see it. And so I do encourage that as well. Now, if the damage is pretty cut and dry and you feel good about the contractor that's out there, then yeah, there's no problem with moving forward on that. But 100% get professional licensed eyes on it before you do decide to move forward with that claim.
Yeah. So reputable contractors, I feel like it's a tough thing, because there's so many contractors in the Middle Tennessee area. You really don't know unless you have a good referral from somebody else. And as we were talking about earlier, you were mentioning that there's over 150 roofing companies in Middle Tennessee. So how do you discern if it's one or the other?
Yeah, it's probably pretty close to that number. I don't have the exact number, but There's actually a few different ways you can do that. And one thing that we should probably touch on too is like Google LSA and advertising, because just if you Google like roofing company near me or licensed roofing company, like if these guys are paying Google all the money in the world, Google's going to show them up first. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're the best. And so one thing that I've noticed is some smaller companies tend to have a little bit more customer service. They tend to have a little more hands-on capabilities than a lot of the bigger companies, but that's not always the case. So what I usually encourage people to do is ask around to friends and family and neighbors of people they've used before and had positive experiences from, and have those people out. Because that can usually go a long ways. If your neighbors use that contractor, they were clean, they were timely, they kept them in the loop with everything, then that's what really, really matters. But if not, you can always call around to roofing or exterior contractors and just ask them if they have any references. I know that we keep a PDF of client references that we give out that we've gotten approval from past customers, so that, you know, people can do their due diligence before hiring us for a project. And I think that's something really good. And I would just be very cautious if you ask for that and they're like, oh, we'll get it when we come out, you know, because it's really easy just to have a document you can send out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hiring service providers in any industry is tough, and there's scams and there's bad people in every industry. Mine definitely included. There was an email that went out, I guess like a couple of weeks ago. There was an advisor in Middle Tennessee who just was going to jail for 8 years for a Ponzi scheme. You know, it's things, they just plague a lot of industries. So, and I'm sure yours is the same way too, right? And there's folks out there who, for better word than another, just scam people. So how do you identify a scam? What are some of the common ones out there that you see?
A lot of them, you know, one of the kind of controversial topics is like door-to-door people, because there are some door-to-door guys that may be a little scammy, but oftentimes where roofing contractors get in trouble is they come at it with good intentions, but their company is just not structured well. They don't have great management. They don't have great cash flow. They're not good with their financials. And so they're constantly robbing Peter to pay Paul. And so most of the contractors that I see go down in the roofing space had good intentions. They just ran out of money and couldn't fulfill on their promises. And so there are certain bonds that I'm sure you talk with some of your clients about, like performance bonds and things like that, that'll protect those homeowners. And so those are things that can be done by project, especially on bigger projects, if a lot of money is going to be exchanging hands. Those are things that contractors can get and put into place. But, you know, I definitely urge against out-of-state or storm-chasing contractors. And the main reason is if you have an issue with that project, because we're all human and we all make mistakes, and you definitely want to have a contractor that can come back and address an issue or a warranty claim and actually stand behind their work. So I'm huge on supporting local. And, you know, one thing that I joke with my customers, I've never had anybody take me up on this, but I'll offer to let them take a picture of my driver's license so they'll know where I live.
So how's Paragon going out and getting new business right now, besides your amazing social media presence that you have?
Yeah, so a lot of it comes through from social media. We diversify and we do a little bit of advertising on Nextdoor. We do some brand awareness stuff on Facebook just to let people know who we are. But most of our business comes from referrals from happy customers, as well as referrals from insurance agents. I do a lot of networking, like with farmers. I do a lot of networking with independent brokers that can kind of shop carriers around a little bit. And we can get into that too, because I love independent agents. And so, yeah, but mainly everything that we get comes from word of mouth referrals. And then another thing that we like to do, and this is another thing where people tend to look down on door-to-door guys, but I look at it as a service. If I inspect, Nick, your house and you've got hail and or wind damage or something like that on it, I would feel like I'm doing a disservice not to at least let your neighbors know what I found on your house and see if they've had theirs looked at. Because the last thing I want is you to have a 96-year-old lady living next door that has no idea she's got a chunk of shingles off of her roof and then her drywall collapse on her. And so, you know, it definitely helps. We always just tell people like, hey, we're in the neighborhood helping out Nick next door. He had some wind damage. You know, have you already looked into the insurance process or had your house professionally inspected to make sure that it's in top shape and has a clean bill of health? And so, again, it all kind of goes back to the referrals and then just letting people know why we're there and what we're doing, and also letting them have contact information in the event that we're moving forward with a project and we have a truck that's blocking their way, or it's a windy day and debris is blowing around into their yards. We want to make sure that we can stay on top of that.
Yeah, man, door-to-door people get a bad rap. I actually started my business going door-to-door. You know, it's fun knocking on doors, and it's hard work. And it's, you know, it's funny now that if anybody comes and knocks on my door, I live on a big hill and it's a bit of a long driveway. I mean, if they're coming all the way out, there's a good chance I'm probably going to buy something from them. That's how I got my pest control and also AT&T. So, I think it's honorable and it's hard work, too.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. But one thing that, you know, we train a lot of our guys is you never know what people are dealing with either. And so people are not normally just nasty. Some are, but you never know if they just got a traumatic phone call right before you knocked on their door. You don't know if they just put the baby down and they haven't slept for a day and a half and you just woke the baby up. So, you know, we never take it personally when people get upset. If we're there, we just apologize for bothering them. But one thing that we do is we respect the no soliciting signs.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was always big on that and had your solicitor badge and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
So, well, cool. All right. So so let's say you've started a process, and I really wasn't aware too much of this until I actually had to file a homeowner's claim a couple of years ago, but how are roofers typically paid?
So, one of the biggest things, if it's a retail project, the contractor will typically provide you an estimate for the services, and majority of contractors will use subcontracted labor. I get a lot of people that ask questions about subcontracted labor, but typically, unless the state requires that you have W-2 workers that are doing your labor, it's typically going to be subcontracted. You know, I know DeSantis kind of did that down in Florida, and the biggest thing that's going to do is drive prices through the roof because the workman's comp rates are so high. And so I don't know of any residential roofing companies that have in-house labor crews. And so, It's not a scary thing. You know, one of the things that homeowners could ask for is for a verification of the subcontractor's certificate of insurance, or at least verifying that the contractor that they're hiring has insurance, because, you know, we have a master subcontractor agreement with our guys that they assume the liability under their certificate of insurance, and then we'll carry $1 million in general liability with an additional $1 million umbrella, so that in the unfortunate event that that subcontractor had a lapse in their coverage, we would kick in before it ever got to the homeowner. But I don't get asked near enough for copies of our state licensing or our insurance. And that's one thing I really, really, really encourage. Or at least go to tnverify.com and verify that contractor's license to make sure it's actually active.
Awesome. So y'all are typically getting paid straight from the insurance company, though, correct?
Well, when the insurance companies, yeah, that's what you were saying. So with insurance claims, it doesn't work quite like medical claims, because insurance policies for medical coverage will typically have an assignment of benefits where the carrier can pay the service provider at the hospital or whatever directly. But when it comes to home service work and property claim losses, the insurance company owes the duty and the policy to the homeowner. So if the homeowner has a contract with a contractor, they'll often issue the check in the name of the insured as well as the contractor, and then sometimes the lien holder if there is one on the house. And then so those checks will typically go directly to the homeowner, and then the homeowner can either deposit those and write a check to the contractor that they hire, or they can simply endorse the back of them and write pay to the order of contractor, and then issue those to the contractor, and they can get those settled up. But when it comes to insurance losses, insurance companies will typically utilize third-party softwares. Two of the biggest ones are either Xactimate or Symbility. So a lot of your bigger carriers will use Xactimate. And what that uses is the average of like contractor submitted estimates that have been sent in based on zip code. And so finding a contractor that understands the softwares that the insurance companies use, because there's three different levels of certification in Xactimate. I carried level two, which can pretty much handle anything outside of a total home loss, being able to estimate it and communicate it with the insurance companies. Because the biggest thing is when these adjusters come out to write the losses, they may have just looked at a car and then a boat and then a horse trailer and then an RV. So they have pre-built templates for like, oh, a shingle roof. And so it may not have certain components on it that need to be on there. So having a contractor that knows how to communicate that to you and the insurance company so that you get everything that you're owed so that you can be brought back to a pre-loss condition. But yeah, all those insurance checks will typically go directly to the homeowner, and then they will be able to issue those to the contractor.
All right. So what happens? And this one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on was I had a client last year. I had a loss from it was a roofing loss, and this particular carrier didn't want to pay for the entire project, and you were able to help them out with that. So what happens when that carrier doesn't want to pay out or make it whole?
Yeah, well, and again, a lot of these adjusters that come out and the ones that are dealing directly with the homeowners, they're not necessarily the decision maker entirely. They're normally having to go back to a supervisor that's sitting behind a desk somewhere. And so they'll go out and what people need to understand, contractors need to understand this, and homeowners is adjusters are trained on the policy and what's covered and what's not. They're not trained in building standards. They're not trained in codes. They're not trained in material specifications from the distributors and the manufacturers. That's the job of the contractors to understand that. So the contractor has a duty by law, being licensed as a contractor, to uphold the minimum building standards, which are just building codes in the area. And so if an insurance if an insurance scope of work goes against those manufacturer specs or minimum building code standards, then it's the contractor's job to prove that in documentation and not just say it. Because there's a lot of contractors that they'll tell the insurance company that till they're blue in the face. But I'll tell the adjusters, hey, man, I know you have a supervisor that needs you to show your work. So I'm going to make sure I make your job easy and give you photos, supporting documentation, as well as an estimate so that I can make your life easier. And so
can you talk a little bit about just what the adjuster is, because when I filed a home claim, I had no idea about any of this process. Can you just talk about who that person is and what they do and what part of the process they come out?
Yep. Yeah. So there's, after a claim gets filed, usually within about 72 hours, a representative from the insurance company will reach out to the homeowner to go over coverages, their policy, their deductibles. And then usually during that call, they'll also assign an adjuster to come out and inspect the property. One of the things that we'll get into later on is some of the duties after a loss, because you're actually required in your contract of insurance, which is your policy, to allow the insurance company to inspect the loss. And so there's typically three different people that may come out. You have third-party ladder assists. Those are typically a third-party company subcontracted by the insurance company to come out simply for the purpose of documenting what they see. So they're not a decision maker, and they're just out there to do whatever they're asked to do by the insurance company, which is normally to inspect for any storm-related damages. Then the next step up from that would be an independent adjuster. Independent adjusters are also third parties hired by these insurance companies because, again, this goes back to workman's comp. If these insurance companies have adjusters climbing on roofs, they're paying liability insurance and workman's comp insurance on their employees that could potentially slip off of a roof and get hurt, and they don't want to take that liability on. So oftentimes they'll bring in third party independent adjusters who work for their own individual firm or maybe even a corporate firm that's that's assigned out to the house to go inspect the property, but also estimate the damages, submit the photos with the estimate over to the insurance company so that they can then make the coverage decision. And what I've seen in my experience is about 9 times out of 10, the insurance carrier will go with what the independent adjuster said. And then the last person that you may deal with is an actual staff adjuster. That would be somebody that is hired by the insurance company, a W-2 employee for the insurance company, and they do the same thing as an independent adjuster. They're just a direct employee of the insurance company. So typically those guys are salaried employees. Your independent adjusters are typically paid a percentage of the claim that they have to write, or maybe a certain dollar amount for each estimate that they write. And then the third-party ladder assists are typically paid flat fees based on the type of structure they're having to go check out.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's interesting. So kind of going back to that original question is, what happens if they're not, they don't want to pay as much as what it costs to make the roof whole? What options do you have there? Because I know you shared a document with me last year for this client of mine to share with his insurance company, and it worked.
Yeah. So if the insurance company comes out and tries to do a partial repair and it's not quite compliant, the contractor at that point needs to show why, and they need to make it very, very visible. So that usually entails going back to the house and using chalk to mark up the roof to show why certain things need to be done, or if there's going to be appearance issues between the original material on the roof and the replacement material on the roof. And we're typically able to go out, document what needs to be done. And another big thing that a lot of contractors fail on is pre-existing conditions, because the insurance company will typically... excuse me, these allergies have been killing me. The insurance company will typically owe for what was pre-existing on the roof, and then some policies will pay a little more money for code compliance as well. But if you're able to prove certain things existed before the loss, then the insurance company owes to put it back that way, which will typically require additional parts of the roof to be torn into. So it all comes down to the contractors being knowledgeable to be able to turn repairs into full replacements if it's required in order to satisfy either manufacturer specifications, minimum building standards, or one thing that a lot of people don't think about is HOA requirements.
Oh, yeah. That's important. So let's say you have an issue with your roof. So when would you file a claim versus when not to file a claim?
Well, we will usually leave that 100% up to the homeowner. When we go out and inspect a property, if there's a storm date and they have storm-related damages, we'll go out there, and the first thing we do is we take a 360 walk around the perimeter of their house to just do far-out pictures. Then we want to do close-up photos to see if there's any collateral damage, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to tell the story of what happened at the property. Because these adjusters weren't in that neighborhood when it happened. We weren't in that neighborhood when it happened. The homeowner might not have even been home. If the homeowners can have photos, videos during the event, if they're home, that goes a long ways. If you get hail at your house and you can safely get a handful of it and stick it in your freezer, that goes a long ways. I've seen homeowners come out with handfuls of hail and be like, this is what hit my house. And there's not a whole lot the insurance company can say at that point about like, oh, well, we don't see it here. But we'll check out, and we want to try and slowly start to paint this picture. We want to know what direction the storm came in, what sides of the home should have been damaged. And then another one of the biggest thing that contractors will skip, and homeowners should be cautious about this, is getting into the attic space to look at the underside of the roof deck. Because if I go in for a surgery, the hospital is always going to go in and x-ray me. And so if your roofer or your contractor is not going to go x-ray the underside of the roof deck to see where any potential damages or issues may be, big red flag. But then finally, you know, I've been doing this long enough that when we do our inspections and when we train our guys to do their inspections, we try and do an inspection in a way that we don't really care what the insurance company says when they initially come out. We have enough documentation to support what needs to be done so that in the event, like what you'd said earlier, in the event that the insurance company comes out and they don't agree with the damages or they're only going to pay for part of the damages, but maybe they missed some, you've already got the documentation there that you can send in. And another thing that a lot of contractors should do, and I encourage homeowners to do this big time, especially with how a lot of this stuff is changing with insurance, is you have the right as a homeowner to video your adjuster meeting. And so that's something that a lot of people don't take advantage of, because when I go out to a property to perform an inspection, my inspection normally takes anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. I've never had an adjuster meeting last more than about 30 minutes, and I've had some that they'll climb up on the roof and come down about 8 minutes later, and I'll know because I'll take a photo when they go up the ladder, and then when they're coming down, I'll take another photo, and then when the insurance company turns around and says no damage, I can send in my photo report showing an 8-minute inspection, and then I can send in my photo report showing an hour and 45-minute inspection and say, hey, we've got some damages that were overlooked, and if you notice these timestamps, the adjuster that was hired spent about 8 minutes on the roof. I spent an hour and 45. Who do you think found more damage? And that goes a long ways. It goes a long, long way.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So you brought with us today a homeowner's policy for us to go through, and I think this is going to be super educational. Yeah, for those of you listening, what we'll do is we'll leave this PDF in the show notes for you, and so you'll be able to follow along. And this particular policy is from State Farm, and I'm glad you brought a State Farm policy because they insure a ton of Tennesseans, especially here in the Middle Tennessee area, and several of my clients too. So it'll be a little bit easier to follow along with that. So let's get to this.
Yeah. And then, Nick, one thing that I'll also do is I have a few documents that I'll share with you that you can send out to your clients, one of which is about 8 or 10 questions that they can ask their agent in regards to their policy that will point them towards some pretty important coverages to have, as well as a claims timeline that they can kind of understand how long the claims process should take so that they have realistic expectations. But also, as we dive into this policy, it'll allow homeowners to kind of understand a little bit more how losses are settled so that they can make sure that they're holding the insurance company's feet to the fire, because that's something that the contractors are legally not allowed to do, because if the contractor steps in and references policy at all, they're actually in violation of the unauthorized practice of public adjusting, which is illegal in the state of Tennessee. And there's a lot of contractors in Texas that have went to jail for it, Florida that have went to jail for it, and it's only going to get cracked down on more. So I also want to send you some links over to the United Policyholders Association, which is a nonprofit organization that your clients can go to and select state-by-state help, and they can look at their consumer protection laws in regards to insurance for the state of Tennessee, to see different timelines that these insurance companies are legally required to abide by, but sometimes they don't. And so if the homeowner can call them on that, that's huge. So yeah, whenever you want to dive into this, sorry about that. I just want
to— Yeah, no, that's awesome. I really appreciate that. That's super helpful. Yeah, let's dive into this policy.
All right, so I've got this State Farm policy here. And one thing is, people have a big issue with State Farm and how their claims team has been handling claims over the last couple of years, but their policies are actually very well written for the homeowners. And another thing, too, is insurance policies are a contract of adhesion. And what that means is the insurance policy is written by the insurance company and it's signed by the homeowner. So the homeowner has no say, really, besides the coverages they select, what the verbiage is inside of that policy. So insurance policies are really supposed to lean in favor of the policyholder because they're contracts of adhesion. But insurance companies are not operating that way right now. But if homeowners understand that, then they can hold these insurance companies very accountable. So on page 2 of most policies, you'll get into just kind of an index of the provisions of the policy. So the provision is just any specific coverages or verbiage that's inside of the policy. So, you know, you have coverage A, which is your dwelling. And so if you take your house and you could physically turn it upside down and shake it, everything that stays attached to that structure is covered under the dwelling coverage. Everything that falls out is your personal property. And so that's a really easy way to think about that. So coverage A, everything, your fixtures, your drywall, your carpets, everything that won't fall out if you shook your house. But coverage B, personal property, that's everything that's going to fall out. That's your desk, your computers, your TVs, things like that. I also highly recommend that homeowners know a living inventory list of what's in their house, even a good idea of what it is, because in the event that you have a total loss, the insurance company is going to pretty much ask you what was in your house. And you may have $100,000 worth of stuff. You may have $3 million worth of stuff, but you definitely want to get that stuff checked out and also consult with your agent, because some things are excluded under standard insurance policies for personal property, such as collector's items, or they may have policy limits. So if you have a massive baseball card collection worth $50,000, you may want to look into some additional coverages that can help insure those type items in the event that you have a really severe damaging loss. So I didn't even think we'd touch on that, but I'm glad we did.
No, that's great. I always recommend that. And I think that was a great example too of coverage A and coverage B. I wish I knew that going into the CFP exam. Would help you a little bit.
Yeah. And then finally, you've got some coverage C, which is more of your loss of use. That'll cover some of your additional living expenses, fair rental value, prohibited use. But additional living expenses, ALE, that's a big one, because if you have a total loss and you have to go live somewhere else, you need to understand how that's actually going to be handled. And there's also some really good companies out there that will help you out with additional living expenses, such as helping you find a place to go stay in the event that you have a loss. But when you get into there, it'll kind of get into some of your coverages, your deductibles. And if any homeowners just want to see kind of a snapshot of their insurance policy, there's what's called a declarations page, or a deck page is what's said it for short. And that will give you a 30,000 foot view of what's covered in your policy, as well as your policy limits, because a lot of insurance policies now are moving away from your standard $1,000 or $1,500 deductibles, and they're moving more to percentage-based deductibles, or they may have a $1,000 deductible for wind, but a 3% on hail. And so that's good stuff to know, because if you have wind and hail damage, it may make more sense to file under wind to lessen your out-of-pocket hit. And so if you don't know that and the contractor can't look at that, you could end up with a massive difference in out-of-pocket expense for something that could have been covered in a different direction. So you'll get into the definition section, which is going to actually say what some of the words mean inside of the insurance policy. And continuing on down through here, deductibles. Section 1, property coverages. So under the dwelling, we'll cover the dwelling and materials and supplies located on or adjacent to the resident premises in the use of construction, alteration, or repair of the dwelling. The other thing that I should mention is insurance policies are supposed to be written in a way where the average consumer can understand what they mean. And licensed professionals in insurance even have a hard time interpreting policy. I've done a lot of policy interpretation classes, and you can have 25 people read a section in a policy and you can get 10 different interpretations of that. And so they really should do a better job on that. I know Farmers has the Farmers Smart Plan policy, and those are worded very, very well, because their policies, if they say it, that's what it means. It's not very ambiguous. You'll get down into a lot of the details of your coverage B as you go through, which again was your personal property, property not covered. Here's another thing too, you know, articles separately described and specifically insured in this or any other insurance. So if you do have one of those collector cases or collector's items that are insured through another service provider, sometimes that will kick in before your main homeowner's policy will. Loss of use, you'll get into a lot of details on loss of use, but then also additional coverages are important. And one thing that I should mention is a lot of these insurance policies here, they include everything listed in your standard coverages unless it's specifically excluded in the policy or endorsed out of the policy. So one thing that a lot of like licensed public adjusters will get wrong is they may find coverage under the additional coverages section, but if at the end of the policy there's an endorsement in there that actually endorses that coverage out, then that endorsement will supersede whatever is said inside of that policy. So if a homeowner does want to know what type of coverage they had during a particular loss, they want to contact their insurance company or their agent and ask for a certified copy of the policy with endorsements that was active during the date of loss. And so that's very important, because if you don't ask for some of those endorsements on the policy, they sometimes may not send them. And I don't think that they do that on purpose. I just think they go in and grab a document and blast it out. And so it's definitely good to ask for that certified copy of the policy. And again, when you get into section one of the policy, this is going to cover more of your losses that are insured against. And so in here, it will, we will pay for accidental direct physical loss to the property described in coverage A, which is your dwelling, unless the loss is excluded or limited in section one of losses not insured. So losses not insured are your exclusions. And again, you can have a loss that's not insured that gets endorsed back into the policy at the end. So just because this initial section says it's a loss that's not insured, it could potentially be endorsed back in. You oftentimes just have to pay a little bit of additional premium for that. But the losses that you're typically always going to have coverage for is this list down here on the right-hand side. So fire or lightning, wind or hail, explosion, riot or civil commotion, aircraft, vehicles, smoke, vandalism, or malicious mischief, theft, falling objects, weight of ice, snow, or sleet. Here's another thing, too, falling objects. If you have trees over your house and you have a tree limb fall and break through your roof, that can often be covered under falling object. And then that removal of that tree from the house is typically what we call an egress thing, because you have to be able to have access to perform the repairs. So it'll typically be included in that dwelling coverage because you have to be able to remove that in order to perform the repairs. But one of the main things that I wanted to get into here is if you pull up your insurance policy, and I think it's, I'm trying to remember how you search. Do you remember how you search on a PDF?
On a, I think it's either Control F or Control S, maybe.
Yeah, I thought it was
Control. I'm sure all about that.
Yeah, maybe it could be the,
it might just, are you on Google? Yeah, that's probably why.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, I'm in the drive. That could be it. But again, when you get into here, like ordinance and law coverage, this is always a really good coverage to have, because if your home was built 20, 30, 40 years ago and it's not up to current building codes, in the event that you have a loss, any items that are code required now but were not at the time of the loss oftentimes require that ordinance and law coverage to pay that additional money. And that's normally for items that are not present on the home but then are required to be done. And one of the biggest ones we see in roofing is like your drip edge and then the valley liners, such as the ice and water shield and things like that. But I'm going to try and skim down. Yeah, the loss settlement provision. The loss settlement is usually one of the most important areas inside of the policy, because that'll tell you actually how the losses are settled. So under coverage A for dwelling, you can see that this policy pays the replacement cost loss settlement for similar construction. So they owe for like kind and quality of what you have on your roof. And then it says, we will pay the cost to repair or replace with similar construction and for the same use on the to repair or replace the damaged part of the property. When the repair or replace, oh, sorry, that went up this way. This does not apply to an insured who did not participate in, cooperate in, or contribute to causing or procuring a loss. Also, we will not pay for, under any part of this policy, any loss consisting of one or more of the following items. So this section here is hands down the most important part of the policy, because we're fixing to get into what's referred to as the ensuing loss provision. Are you familiar with that, Nick?
I'm not. No, not at all.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I did a policy class that was 2 8-hour days, and you want to talk about, like, wanting to drive a pencil in your ear but then loving it at the same time? So I want to read this, and y'all just bear with me, because you'll see that the policy here says that we will not pay for, under any part of this policy, any loss consisting of one or more of the items below. Further, we will not pay for any loss described in paragraphs 1 and 2 immediately above, regardless of whether one or more of the following: A, directly or indirectly cause, contribute to, or aggravate the loss, or B, occur before, at the same time, or after the loss, or any other cause of loss. Do you see what I mean when I say that they do not write these in a way that you like? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's pretty terrible. But I mean, I hate it. That it plagues our industry too. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
You guys do. Yeah,
for sure. And so, how many people, either listening to this podcast, watching this part, or maybe even you, Nick, have had the insurance company come out and say, "Well, we see hail damage, but there's wear and tear. Well, we see wind damage, but there's improper installation, so we don't owe for it." And I truly believe that they think that. But majority of insurance policies with this section here that we're fixing to dive into, considered the ensuing loss provision, will nip that in the bud if the policyholder knows about this. And so notice in the section we just said, it says we will not pay for any of these losses. So conduct, act, failure to act, or decision of any person, group, organization, or governmental body, whether intentional, wrongful, negligent, or without fault. So this could be something where a storm comes through, a big section of shingles blows off, and the homeowner does not hire a contractor to tarp that area. And so that's important to talk about, is if you're missing shingles, you're required to protect your property from any further damages. And keep those receipts, pay the contractor. You know, we will typically just roll it into the loss, but if the homeowner doesn't necessarily want to hire us yet, but they want us to do an emergency tarp, we can do that and give them a bill, and they can pay us, and they can hold on to that. And in the event it's a covered loss, that money that they paid will normally be applied towards their deductible. But carrying on.
I think it's super important, Taylor, because, I mean, a lot of people will see something. Well, hopefully they'll see it. I mean, they might not, but
yeah,
it just, we as humans have a tendency to put it off. It's like, oh, I'll get up there next week. I'll get on the ladder and tarp it. I'll do whatever. And then we just leave it there. Especially, yeah. I mean, as homeowner, it happens all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And because one thing that I've literally seen adjusters do, I've had it happen on projects when I first got into the industry, is I've had homeowners that have had shingles missing. I went out there. There was a wind event that had happened recently. So we were like, hey, there's damage on the roof. We had this windstorm. Let's move forward. The adjuster will go to Google Earth and they'll look at the overview. Yeah, they'll go to the overview of the house and they'll see if those shingles were missing prior to when you were claiming that they were missing, and they'll deny the coverage.
Wow.
And so, yep, I've had it happen to me a few times. And that's when I started, like, from a roof, I will pull the satellite measure or the satellite photos of the house and confirm that before we ever even move forward. I had an adjuster one time tell me that the damages were pre-existing and he had seen it on Google. And I pulled it up on Google and I said, oh, this picture where the roof was fine. And he couldn't say anything. And so I don't even know why he went that route. But Yeah, it was wild. But if there's any defect, weakness, inadequacy, fault, or unsoundness in planning, zoning, development, surveying, design specifications, look, workmanship, repair, construction. So if there's any poor workmanship on here, any weather conditions, but however, that's a big word, however, we will pay for any resulting loss from items 3, A, B, and C. So all of these are still covered under the policy unless the resulting loss itself is a loss not insured as described in this section. So as long as the policy does not endorse that out in any way, shape, form, or fashion, your wear and tear, your improper installation that caused that, is still covered under this ensuing loss provision. So what a homeowner can do if they want to find their ensuing loss provision is pull their insurance policy up and use the search feature. And Nick and I both thought it's Control F, and search for results resulting ensues ensuing, because it's either going to be one of those four words that's going to point you towards this section of your policy. And if you have an adjuster saying that they're not going to cover it because of wear and tear or anything like that, go in and look in your policy and see if it's actually not covered or if the adjuster just thinks that it's not covered.
So how often have you actually seen that excluded?
Very rarely. About 90% of insurance policies right now still have the ensuing loss provision. It's being leveraged a lot more. And so I think you're going to see way more insurance policies start to endorse that out or rewrite their policies. So this is something that very well could go away over the next few years. And so that's why it's always good to stay up to date with nerds like me who love this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excuse me. And so, again, this just gets into a little bit more of the loss settlement. And I don't want to go into an extremely big deep dive on the policy and just bore your customers. But one thing that I do want to touch on is what is considered the duties after a loss, because oftentimes an insurance agent will tell you what your duties after a loss are, but I've never heard of an adjuster that will tell a homeowner like, hey, heads up, make sure you do these things, otherwise we don't have to pay you anything. And so I want to try and skim down here and see where I can find, bam, here we go, and it was close. So under some of your conditions, and actually I'm in section two, let me go back into section one here so that we can pull up our duties after a loss. Where'd it go? Conditions. Your duties after a loss. After a loss to which this insurance may apply, you must cooperate with us in the investigation of the claim and also see that the following duties are performed. In contracts, if you see and, must, those are requirements. And so give immediate notice to us or our agent, and also notify the police if the loss is caused by theft, vandalism, or any other criminal act, and the credit card company or bank if the loss involves a credit card or a bank fund transfer. So what this is pretty much saying is, if you have a windstorm come through and you have damages, have a contractor come out and look at it. If those estimated damages are going to exceed your deductible, we have a lot of customers that'll be like, hey, we don't know if we want to file a claim yet. And I'm like, hey, I get it. Are you familiar with your duties after a loss? And 99% of the time, they're like, I have no idea. And it's like, well, I don't know what your insurance policy says, but I know my insurance policy at my house says that I'm actually required to notify the insurance company when I have a loss because they have a vested interest in the property. And it can actually lead to them denying coverage in the future, like in the Google case where they looked at the satellite view and there was legit wind damage. It may have been covered under the policy, but since that homeowner didn't perform their duties after a loss, they were stuck like Chuck and just couldn't do anything. So here's the section here, your duty after a loss: protect the property from further damages or loss, and also make reasonable and necessary temporary repairs required to protect the property and keep an accurate record of those repair expenses. So right there, the policy that's signed, which is a contract, which you've transferred that risk of a financial hardship to this insurance company, in this case, State Farm. If a contractor tells you you've got shingles missing and decking exposed and they offer to tarp it, let them do that, because if you don't and it ends up causing interior damages that maybe weren't there before, the insurance company doesn't technically owe for that. They may not know and they may still cover it, but they technically don't owe for that. C, prepare an inventory of damaged or stolen personal property. That's the important part about having a living inventory in your house, because I don't know about you, Nick, but if somebody came and cleared me out right now, I wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, me neither.
You know? And so that's all stuff like, you know, that's why I love getting to do this, because it's stuff that I know I need to do too. But then showing in detail the quantity, description, age, replacement cost, and amount of loss, and attaching all bills, receipts, and related documents that substantiate the figures in the inventory. As often as we reasonably require, exhibit the damaged property, which is allow the insurance company to look at it, and so provide us with any requested records and documents and allow us to make copies. 3, while not in the presence of any other insured, meaning you don't have other policies covering certain things, give statements and submit to examinations under oath and produce employees, members of the insured's household, so they can actually question your family members and things like that, or others for examination under oath to the extent it is within the insured's power to do so. And all these ands, submit to us within 60 days after the loss your signed sworn proof of loss that sets forth to the best of your knowledge and belief the time and cause of loss, blah, 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 blah. Now, sometimes, I don't know if, yeah, so State Farm's policy doesn't even say it, is some insurance policies will say if we ask for it or after request, you have 60 days to submit it, but according to this State Farm policy, submit to us within 60 days after the loss your signed sworn proof of loss that sets forth to the best of your knowledge and belief the time and cause of loss, interest of the insured and all others in the property involved, and all encumbrances on the property, other insurances that may cover that loss, changes in title or occupancy, specifications of any damage to the structure. And so it says it pretty clear as day right in through there that the homeowner is required to submit a formal sworn proof of loss in a State Farm loss. And so if that's not done and the insurance company kicks this down the road, they could technically turn around and be like, hey, you didn't send us a proof of loss, it's in your policy. And that would just be an absolute, absolute nightmare. So that pretty much, Nick, covers a lot of the stuff that your homeowners need to know without getting into a lot more of the boring and monotonous stuff of like coverage 2, which is just your liability if somebody gets hurt out there. That's another thing that's important is, I know like with my insurance agent, we have such a good relationship. I understand what's in my policy, but we also have a lot of trust and I pay him pretty good money so that he makes sure that I'm covered in the event that I have a loss. And I can usually just call him and be like, hey, if this happens, what do I need to do? Or am I insured for this? Or am I insured for that? So, Nick, I will definitely, when we get done with this, I want to send you over some of that stuff that you can share with your customers, because knowledge is definitely power, and with insurance policies changing the way that they are so rapidly, homeowners need to be aware so that they can better protect themselves, because unfortunately, a lot of these insurance companies now, they have stakeholders to answer to, and it's a shame, and that's why I really love independent agencies and stuff like that, because those agents, it's their job to make sure you get the best coverage for the best price. And so that's why I love independent agents.
Yeah, can the insurance company change the provisions of the policy without you knowing?
Oh, that actually happened. I'm so glad you brought that up. Is the insurance company is required to notify you in writing of any policy changes that are going to happen. And typically they're required to do that the year before they happen. Now, let me tell you how they do that. Is when you get your policy renewal every year, they send you about a 70 to 100 page packet with your new policy. And about page 70 or 80, they will bury in there an endorsement that may be changing some of the coverages, such as maybe you had replacement cost coverage on your roof, but they're going to have a notification letter in there that says, hey, our records indicate your roof is 14 years old. Once it turns 15, your coverage will transfer to actual cash value and we will only owe the actual cost to repair the damaged material minus the depreciation. So if your roof is 15 years old and it's a $50,000 roof, the insurance company may only owe you $20,000, $25,000, $30,000, however they estimate it. And then I had that happen to a really, really sweet lady here in my own neighborhood, and she had the exact same thing happen. She sent me her last three policies, and I was able to help her look through them because I do carry my public adjuster license, so I can review policies. Side note, roofing contractors cannot act as a public adjuster unless licensed as such. That's how the Tennessee law reads. And so that's what they had done to her. Is they did their part. They notified her that the next year her coverage was going to change. She had no clue, and they bury it inside of that renewal. But they have satisfied their state required mandate, which is to notify the insured. But I don't know about you, Nick. I've never read through the entire policy renewal packet that they send in. So again,
I take it, it goes right in the trash or the shredder.
Yeah. I take mine out and I put it in a manila folder and I write 2024 homeowners policy and it goes in my filing.
That's a lot better than what I do. No, that's really good to know. A lot of people don't know that or would never even think to look at it or read through it.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you asked that. And so majority of insurance agents, though, understand that. And so if you do have a good relationship with your agent, you can have those conversations. If you don't, I highly encourage that your guys get with you, Nick, so that you can hook them up with somebody local that will actually be there for them and make sure that they're doing right by the homeowner and not so much just trying to sell policies and make money.
No, that's great. Taylor, thank you so much, man.
This was great.
Super educating. So how can everybody reach you?
So you can find us online. We're at ParagonRoofingUSA.com. You can also check us out on Google if you want to check out any of our Google reviews. And then also our direct office number is 615-307-7663. We also have a super convenient online calendar tool. So if you did want us to come out, check out anything, just give you a peace of mind inspection, you can book without even talking to anybody right there from the website. You pick the best date and time for you. It automatically comes to us, and we would be more than happy to help you out and just let you know what's going on and make sure that you're protected.
This has been great, bud. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, man.